Hello, Marion Pallister, Justice and Peace Scotland here. Because Christmas was to be spent in solitary confinement, I gave myself the gift of Barack Obama's first presidential memoir, A Promised Land. It has 700 pages and I confess it took a wee while to work through it, but I'd recommend it because of its apparent honesty. He doesn't brag about achievements and is forthright about failures. His account of the Bay of Mexico oil disaster in 2010 was an eye-opener for me in many ways. We all know that an oil spill, however great or small, can be hugely destructive of the environment in which it occurs. We've seen the effects on wildlife here in Scotland. When the Deepwater Horizon rig's technical catastrophe occurred, there was loss of life. 11 of the 126 people on board that rig in the Macondo oil field, to about 50 miles off the coast of the state of Louisiana. And those 11 people were unaccounted for. There was a horrifying battle to plug the hole in the ocean floor that just kept on gushing oil and gases, and the devastating effects on marine life and livelihoods on shore. All of that I remembered and had stored as just some of the reasons fossil fuels should become history. What I didn't take on board at the time was that this offshore drilling was part of Obama's political strategy to save his climate change legislation, which he admits was at that point on life support. Allowing offshore drilling had been a trade-off with Republicans in order to put together a bipartisan climate bill. Obama had been persuaded that the technology and safety of offshore operations had greatly improved, and he'd bartered with the Republicans, allowing operations like risky Deepwater Horizon exploration to go ahead. Given the evidence of what such a disaster could entail, I imagined that the Republicans and the American people would have subsequently come on board to create effective climate legislation that put a lid on fossil fuels of all sorts. But instead, every state that had interests in oil, gas and coal fought tooth and nail to maintain their industries, refusing to consider the alternatives that would have created new, cleaner jobs and a new, cleaner world, taking massive steps towards halting the climate emergency in its tracks. American politics are very complex, and we saw during President Trump's spell in office that, sorry, but it appeared to me to be almost out of badness, coal and oil were prioritised and the US ratification of the Paris Agreement was withdrawn. President Biden, of course, has re-entered the United States in the Paris Agreement, as he had promised to do during his election campaign. But the very tricky tactics that Obama reveals in his book can knock climate change negotiations for six makes me worried for the COP26 meeting that will take place in Glasgow from November the 1st to the 12th. Justice and Peace Scotland supports the Scottish Church's COP26 pledge for divestment and the just and green recovery. Church leaders believe it is unethical for churches to invest in an industry that is harming the planet, as seen in ever more extreme and life-threatening weather events locally and globally. They support the campaign for fossil-free churches and are conscious of the increasingly severe impact of the climate crisis, especially on people living in poverty and on all life in our common home. What perhaps is vital in this pledge, which you can read on Justice and Peace Scotland's website, is that our church leaders stress that they recognise the urgency of the need for a just transition from fossil fuels to clean alternatives that offers jobs and well-being to people in Scotland and across the world. Obama was certainly attempting to offer that just transition, but politics kept getting in the way. The fact that Westminster government planned to support the opening of a new coal mine in the northwest of England suggests that political interest could get in the way in the UK too. Although it must be said that Scotland is being looked to around the world as setting a good example, not only on climate legislation, but just transition. But there is much more work to be done. What happened in the 1980s under the Thatcher government can't be allowed to happen today. If you close a steelworks or a coal mine, you must provide alternative employment. That just didn't happen in those grim days of the late 20th century. Those tactics allowed a mythology, a nostalgia, to grow around the closed industries. People began to forget the realities, the dangers, the threats to both workers and to our common home. I'm only too well aware from the research I did for my book Not a Plaque the Richer, Argyll's Mining Story, that every mine, historical and modern, had its tragedies. Mining in Argyll ranged from coal in Campbelltown in the south, through silver, lead, copper and nickel, to silica in the north of the historic territory of the county. And people died. Some horrifically, like Duncan Cameron, killed in a rock fall in a lead mine in Strauchan. His last words, recorded by a fellow miner at the trial of their foreman in Tobermory, had been, "O Christ, there is no help for me." Lads like Neil Smith and Donald MacPhail, who were drowned in a pit accident in Coal Hill, Kintyre. My own three times great-grandfather, Robert Moody, drowned in a mining accident in the northeast of England in March 1832, his and other bodies found in a most shocking condition, according to the reports, which added, on taking the shoes from Moody, his feet separated with them. Sorry, but that was reality then and possibly even now. Moody's wife, already looking after four children and expecting another, was given the shoes. Those not convinced about climate change or the role fossil fuels play in damaging our common home might say that these accidents are historic and health and safety have made huge strides in protecting the Robert Moody's, Duncan Cameron's and Donald MacPhail's. Let's remind them of the 11 unaccounted for workers on that oil rig in 2010. Let's remind them of the mining accidents in the Far East and in South America in the past couple of years. And let's not let them forget the cost to those breathing in the fumes emitted by our dirty industries. A 2019 report said that the World Health Organization estimated 1.3 million people die each year from causes directly attributable to outdoor air pollution. And we've seen during the pandemic that people living in more polluted areas have been at a higher risk of developing more severe symptoms of COVID and their death rate has been higher. These are just some of the effects on people. Our common home can't breathe either. We've all heard what Sir David Attenborough has to say about the effects of pollutants on land and sea, on diversity. And if we believe that God made it all and that God saw that it was good, who are we to go on damaging and damaging until there's nothing left for our children and grandchildren? No food right now for people living in the most affected areas of the world, areas that have contributed little to the destruction, but feeling the effects the most. What can we do? That's always the question, isn't it? And sometimes we can feel so helpless, especially when we read that party politics can get in the way of climate justice. Well, we have to remember that political parties, and indeed countries, can be persuaded to act justly when the public speaks truth to power. This non-violent tactic is one that has been employed by inspirational campaigners as diverse as Vaclav Havel, Nelson Mandela, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Mahatma Gandhi and the Dalai Lama. And I always reckon that if it worked for them, it's the way to go. Justice and Peace Scotland, SCIAF and Stop Climate Chaos Scotland are collaborating on a campaign that will speak truth to justice during the Scottish parliamentary elections. A day of action is planned for Tuesday, the 6th of April. Look out for it on social media. And the aim is to get the message of the climate crisis and climate justice to all politicians by giving a clear message that the issue of climate has to be a priority, especially with COP coming to Scotland in just a few short months. We can add to that message. Just contact Frances Gallagher at frances.gallagher@justiceandpeacescotland.org.uk. That's frances.gallagher@justiceandpeacescotland.org.uk, and Frances will tell you how. And that Scotland Church's COP26 pledge, supported by Eco Congregation Scotland, stresses that denominations, regional church bodies and Christian organisations in Scotland are committed to divest any existing fossil fuel investments within the next 2 years and to seek investments with positive environmental benefits and to support a just and green recovery. It also says that as congregations, we call on our national and regional church bodies to divest from fossil fuels and commit to work towards divestment of our own funds as soon as possible, seeking alternative ethical investments where possible. So, are we making that noise in our parishes and to our bishops? The pledge also says that as individuals, we commit to review our own investments and pensions and to seek alternative ethical investments where possible. Let's sign up to that one. Have you asked your pension fund where your money is invested? If you have any savings, and I know they're dwindling as lockdown continues, but every penny counts, are you asking your bank where it invests your money? It could be in fossil fuels. It could be in conventional or nuclear weapons. Is that where you want your savings to be? Tell them no. In Fratelli Tutti, Pope Francis seeks what he calls a better kind of politics and says that sadly today politics often takes forms that hinder progress towards a different world. He suggests that everything depends on our ability to see the need for a change of heart, attitudes and lifestyles. By committing in this pledge to use their financial resources to contribute to the flourishing of God's creation, both now and for generations to come, the churches show that they have seen that need for a change of heart, attitudes and lifestyles. Even in the midst of this pandemic, we can add our voices electronically, and I'm convinced that we can move mountains and save our common home. Never was Pope Francis's Laudato Si encyclical more needed, and this is part of a prayer from that powerful document. God of love, show us our place in this world as channels of your love for all the creatures of this earth, for not one of them is forgotten in your sight. Enlighten those who possess power and money that they may avoid the sin of indifference, so that they may love the common good, advance the weak, and care for this world in which we live. So, let's make our voices heard, and thank you for listening.